Welcome to Whiskey Shenanigans. I'm your host, Randy Warren. Whiskey Shenanigans, where we help our listeners experience the world of whiskey, every aspect of life, as if it was accompanied by a glass of bourbon. The sports world on whiskey. Basically every part of life on whiskey. Whiskey Shenanigans is about getting exclusive interviews from Bourbon Row in Kentucky, where we can learn about the secrets that make our favorite bourbons unique. We will get inside the hearts and minds of many distillers and help you understand what and how they are achieving it. Whiskey Shenanigans is about going beyond boring podcasts featuring just tastings. Heck, what do you get out of that anyway? It's about bringing on guests and experiencing the entire world through whiskey. But be warned, if you're diving in and you want to participate in these riveting discussions, you will need to grab a glass or a dram and be prepared to be entertained. Today, we are really excited to have Michael Diaz from St. Augustine Distillery. Hi, Michael. How you doing?
Outstanding. How are you?
All right. And we were just talking off camera about some really exciting stuff that you were doing. Tell me about the visitations.
So we're inviting you down because really what we are is a touring distillery, right? We, our mission is to make just as spectacular a spirit as we can in the state of Florida. But we really get the opportunity to show our stuff to a lot of visitors and guests because we're in a tourist town. And we've built the distillery to accommodate tours, and we're in one of those towns where they have the green trolleys that come taking people around. And so we've seen as many as 166,000 visitors in a year. We'll get about 135,000 this year. Tourism's down a little bit, and you get a chance to tour the distillery. Learn a little bit about how bourbon's made. A lot of people haven't had a chance to see the process. You know, you get to see the mashing, the fermentation, the distillation, all that stuff. And we've got a lot of display barrels as well. And we do classes. So it's a full day of activity for people.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Really,
I can't wait. I got to come down there in a couple of weeks and visit you.
Love to have you. We can't brag about a lot of stuff, but we can brag about doing a heck of a job treating guests right.
Nice. I've been on a lot of tours in like Scotland, and I went to Kentucky in the spring of this year and went on a bunch of tours up there and saw a lot of stuff. But, you know, there are some differences between Florida and, you know, Kentucky. So maybe you could fill us in on that.
Well, for a couple things, there's a couple things really, and the first and foremost is our climate.
Right.
So, as you know, because you toured all those distilleries in Scotland, barrels go inert below 40 degrees Fahrenheit, right? So a lot of times, you know, one of the reasons some of these scotches are so old is the barrels are asleep half the year. Well, in Florida, our barrels never sleep. And so we get a tremendous amount of extraction. And you know, the two things you'll get out of a barrel, one is extraction, where you'll pull all those congeners out of the wood. And the second is the reaction, the oxidation you get in the headspace. And we get a tremendous amount of extraction very quick and very early. So you'll see our bourbons tend to be much darker for their age than another, say, a Kentucky bourbon.
Right.
And the second thing is we actually lose, because we're such a humid environment, our evaporative loss tends to be more alcohol vapor than water vapor, because it's not a dry environment. It's a wet environment. There's plenty of water there. So it really is a much differently aged spirit, even though it may have a similar mash bill. But making bourbon in Florida is a little bit different because we age ours in, ambient temperature. And so while we will use similar barrels than everybody else, our mash bill has a little more barley in it to really help us offset some of the challenges we see with the heat.
Okay. So do you use like a char level on all of them, or do you change it depending on which one you're, you know, distilling?
Yeah. So we started with a matrix, and we experimented, as many do. We distilled our first barrel of bourbon in December of 2013. And, you know, we tried, we started with all Kelvin cooperage, and tried different chars, tried different woods, you know, Minnesota oak, Missouri oak, Kentucky oak, char A, char B, char C. And really we've settled on mostly Minnesota oak, which that tighter grain works a little bit better for us.
Okay.
We like medium toast on the toasted heads and typically a char B, char C.
Nice. Nice.
And we've expanded our barrel matrix a little bit in that we not only use Kelvin Cooperage out of Louisville, but we also use West Virginia Barrel Company for a little Appalachian oak to get a little bit different flavor in the palate there. And we use Radu barrels, which are a larger format barrel, wine quality staves, so a little bit thicker staves.
Okay.
And that's part of that, we get some really interesting flavors, and part of that's a little bit of an attempt to control a little bit of that evaporative loss. So if we can
right.
minimize angel share, we can hopefully make a little bit keep our product aging longer without having to lose it all.
Yeah, so like a 3 year or 4 year whiskey in Florida is probably like what, an 8 year in Kentucky?
No, I mean it's one of the things I would say color wise that's true. So
okay.
The extraction and some of the deeper flavors. But one of the things that we have found, and we tried early on all sorts of, you know, smaller barrels and all sorts of stuff. And I will tell you, on the oxidation side, the reaction, you know, the fruit flavors that get developed, you just cannot rush that. And so
okay.
You can't say a statement like that
right.
4
That's
years
too
like
strong.
That. I mean, yeah, people might do that if they're trying to sell you on it, but
right.
What we try to be is radically transparent. And,
right.
You know, our mission, because we do get a lot of people through here, and we just want to educate people. And we want to educate people to try more and varied spirits.
Right.
If ours happens to be one, we're glad to have that, and we'll take you on a great ride.
And do you move them around when you're aging them? Like, do you move the barrels, or do you set them up vertically, or do you spin them?
We have our barrels in metal wine racks, so racks of two. We stack them five high, and we typically do not rotate our barrels. When we make a batch of our Florida straight bourbon, we typically use somewhere between 40 and 60 barrels. And our distillers are very, very purposeful in how they choose those barrels, because you will get, you know, particularly in Florida, and on a summer day, there may be an 18 to 20 degree difference between the floor level and the top level of the barrel, and those barrels will absolutely age differently. You know, every barrel is an organic envelope, right?
Right.
And you
want them to age differently so that you can get different, you know, types of bourbon out, or do you look for more of a consistent flavor across all of them?
Right. It's a great question, and our answer is the first. So we think you get a lot more layers with a varied flavor profile, as opposed to somebody like Maker's Mark who rotates because they want it to be extremely consistent. We like our guys to have the choice on having a little bit more varied spice rack to mix with. And we find different flavoring of the barrels, different barrels work better in different types of finishes. So, for example, we make a port finished bourbon. We also make a toasted finished bourbon. Mm-hmm. The barrels that the distilling team will pick to put into the port barrels are very different from the ones they'll pick to go into the toasted barrels, because the toasted barrels are going to add a lot of vanilla, a little coconut, and, you know, the port is going to add a lot of dark red fruit, you know, kind of those ruby fruits. And so we think it gives our distilling team a little better control over that process to allow them to really create the bourbon they're looking for with that specific finish.
So you're doing a lot of different things when it comes to finishing your whiskeys and your spirits. That's pretty
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Our core spirits, we have our, you know, of course we make vodka, gin, rum, and bourbon, right? Because we're a tour-based facility, and if somebody comes in and doesn't want bourbon, we want to give them something they can take home with them. And our gin is really one of our most award-winning spirits. But on our bourbons, we make our Florida straight bourbon, which is a straight bourbon, you know, at minimum 3.5 years. Most of that's anywhere from 3.5 to 6 years old in that marriage. We make a port finished bourbon, which is finished in port wine barrels that we get from the San Sebastian Winery, which is right down the street, less than a quarter mile away. So I can tell you, we get the wettest port barrels of anybody in the industry because we get them right when they dump them.
Wow.
We make a toasted finish, which is finished in a Kelvin Cooperage toasted barrel. Very delicious. And we make what we call our Saint. And that is a bourbon that is finished in a barrel, one of our ex-bourbon barrels that we sent off to the company that makes our mixers. They make our old-fashioned mix and age it in those barrels. They bottle that old-fashioned mix, send those barrels back to us. We put some of our best barrels of bourbon back in those barrels, all coated with that old-fashioned mix. And we bottle that once it's finished at cask strength, which for us tends to be somewhere around, you know, 112 to 114, depending on the proof it was originally put in the barrel. And those are our core bourbons, but we've also done a lot of different finishes, Amburana, Cognac finish, Armagnac finish, Apera Sherry, Curacao, and every one of those, that's something we call our Explorer Series, where we went and finished in a lot of really nice, different high-end barrels. And they're really, really a nice treat for somebody who really loves some finished bourbons. So our team does a lot with that.
Yeah. Tell me about your team. You know, the tasters, how many people you got doing that? I mean, what are they looking for? Like, are they specific about, oh, I want to get that barrel and I want to put it in that finish and I want to age it this long and, you know.
Yeah. So we have a tour, guided tours, classes, and production, right? And so we've got about 50 people.
Right.
One of the things we do is all of our employees have been through the Stave and Thief Society Bourbon Steward Program. So everybody's very well trained there, from the cashiers to the office personnel. And then our production team, we've got Rick DeMont Mullen is our VP of production, and he really heads up that program. And under him, he's got a team of four people, some of who've been there at least. We've got two that have been there over 11 years and two that have been there, you know, five plus. We have, they've all been very well trained. We initially started with Dave Pickrell, RIP Dave, as our initial consultant on the project, and he was very, very helpful, helped initially train the team. We've had Jake Norris consult with us, as well as Nancy Fraley, and several other really prominent folks in the industry. And we feel like these guys really have a great skill, a great palate knowledge, and really an understanding of how the different spirits fit. And so they do have, we certainly have a house style. And, when we make a batch with 40 to 60 barrels, it gives them the ability to allow the spirit to evolve, but still stay true to the house brand, if you will. But like I said earlier, when they go and if they're making a Armagnac finish, they have in their mind a very specific profile that they believe is going to play well with that barrel. And so they go and like I said, the
hand select it from the
The barrels that are chosen for Armagnac are very, very different than the barrels that are chosen for toasted finish.
Right. So you guys started in 2013. It's not that long ago. It was only 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Did you? You know, sometimes it takes a while to age bourbons and things like that. So how did you get it up and running, and what made you come down this road, this spirits, whiskey, bourbon journey?
Well, my business partner, Phil McDaniel, he had a dream. When I met him, he said, "Oh my gosh, we are going to, the craft distilling world is really going to blow up," right? And he was a real believer. And I was fairly unfamiliar with it. And we went and toured a bunch of distilleries out in the West Coast, Washington, Oregon, Colorado, New York at that time, certainly went up to Kentucky, although Kentucky didn't have a lot of crafts at that time. And and at an ADI conference, American Distillery Institute, Phil was introduced to Dave Prickrell. And, we hired Dave as a consultant. He helped us build the business plan. We believed and still do that having a distillery in a tourist-focused area would allow you to get liquid on lips a lot in a lot easier manner than if you put it in the middle of the boondocks somewhere. And that has proved true. And so we've had a little over 1.1 million people through the facility between we started distilling in December 2013, opened to the public in March of 2014. We made a bunch of bourbon, or a bunch for us. We made probably 20 barrels at that time. And then we started making vodka because we had to have something to sell, because we decided early on that we were not going to source. And that was back in those days, that was kind of the craft mantra. Nowadays, everybody sources, and or many, many people source. And some of our favorite spirits are sourced whiskeys, and there's some really, really good folks that do that. But we chose to, mash, distill, age, and bottle our own. So the first year we sold vodka, and then in July of 2014, we came out with our gin. In September of 2015, we came out with our rum. We initially weren't going to make rum at all because we felt like there was so much good, inexpensive rum out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, we're not sure we're going to have anything unique to say on rum. But people taking the tour always had two questions, when is the bourbon ready? And how come you don't have any rum? So we said, we're going to make rum. Mm-hmm. And our take on rum is we use 100% grade A fancy Florida molasses. We used some very specific yeast strains. We experimented with, you know, probably a dozen different yeast strains. And then we age our rum in our old bourbon barrels. So ours is a straw-colored rum, very delicious, really good. And then the following, I think the fall of 2016, we came out with our first bourbon, and it was younger. It was called Double Cask because we had started in 25-gallon barrels, and we were panicked that it was getting over-oaked because, you know, you have a much higher liquid-to-wood ratio in a small 25-gallon barrel than you do in a 53. And so we finished aging in larger used 53-gallon barrels. So that Double Cask, we used that moniker for several years. And then in 2018, we came out with our Florida Straight Bourbon. And, that is the base for all of our bourbons. It's the same mash bill,
right?
60% corn, 22% barley, 18% wheat. And we're modifying that mash bill now on some experimentations, but you won't be able to drink those for probably 2.5 more years.
Any rise coming down the pike?
No, we opted not to do rise for a couple reasons. One, we've only got so much production capacity to say grace over.
Sure.
Two, rye can really have some interesting effects in your distillery if you're making, a corn bourbon and a rye whiskey. And we're not totally opposed, but we still have a lot to say over the bourbon side before we do rye. Having said that, we drink a lot of rye. We love them. And we certainly have our favorites.
How about you, Mike? I mean, where did you grow up? Are you a Floridian?
So I grew up in Stuart, Florida, which is a little town right above West Palm, about 40 miles north of West Palm. Grew up in Stuart, Florida. Went to high school there. Went to the University of Florida, got an accounting degree and a master's degree, and came up north Florida to Jacksonville to work.
Okay.
And worked in an accounting firm for a number of years, and then went to work at a company. It was actually a large food broker that did a lot of acquisitions, and we were fortunate enough to sell that business. And then I got involved in some other businesses, primarily a tech business that did some online performance reporting for investment advisors. And we sold that business. And then, was looking for something interesting to do. My old college roommate, John Regan, was the city manager in St. Augustine here. It was only 45 miles south of my home in Atlantic Beach. And John introduced me to Phil McDaniel, and we got into this business. So it was a pretty roundabout way, but, it's worked out, and we're having a lot of fun and, trying to make our own little dent in the universe here.
I'm always curious, when you change careers like that, which I've done as well, because it's happened to me, and I just wonder if it happened to you. It's like, what do the people that are close to you say? Like, are they going like, oh, Mike, are you crazy? What are you doing here? Or are they?
Yeah, they're all like, hey, that's crazy. What are you doing? Does it make sense? But then they're intrigued because, whiskey business sounds fun. But I've found business is interesting, and business is business, right? And the thing that makes this business challenging, the pieces I don't like, are the heavy regulation. I also really don't like, when I was in the accounting business, we had payroll and revenue, right? It's very easy. We didn't have inventory, right?
Right.
The same thing with software. You've got, your headcount expenses, and then you got revenue, you sell it. With alcohol, you know, particularly aged spirits, we got what we're making today, and we're making some spectacular spirits today. Right now, the whiskey that was coming off the still this morning was delicious.
Wow.
You're not going to get to taste that for 4 years. I got to stack it up. I got to buy a barrel. I got to put it in the warehouse. I got to pay for storage in that warehouse. And I got to wait 4 years.
Right.
And hope there's no lightning strikes or hurricanes or any of that, right? So that part of the business I don't love. And I also don't love the regulation. You know, we have to file our federal excise taxes every 2 weeks. That's brutal. State excise taxes once a month. And then, you know, we're subjected to these three-tier regulations when we try to sell our product. We're mandated, statutorily mandated, to use a distributor, which is very expensive.
And who is that distributor?
We use Breakthrough in Florida. We use Prime Wine and Spirits in Georgia. And both those guys do a nice job.
Right. So we actually have a lot in common. I started my career in technology as an undergraduate computer scientist.
Nice.
Went to work for a big defense contractor and designed a lot of software and things like that. And then got an MBA and went to work for a small software company that was building derivative software for big international banks.
Nice.
Did that for 10 years, sold that, then went to started my own company, an RIA. And boy, you want to talk about regulation. The SEC is all up in your shorts.
It's tough. It really is.
They really are. They're all up. I mean, software was easy in comparison, like you said, you know, with the regulations in the RIA business, what you can and cannot say.
Oh, my God.
You know, you can't even misquote yourself on, like, you know, how much AUM you have under management or assets under management. You can't quote, if you overestimated somebody, because, oh, well, that did wrong there, you know, that's
right.
A violation. You know,
right.
It's like, whoa, I mean, come on, you know, it was like, today the market went down, so, you know, it went down a little bit. You know what? What am I supposed to do here? But yeah, I hate the regulation side of it. But you know, what did your wife say when you got into this business?
You know, she's probably one of the top 10 most understanding people in the world. She's like, you know, it's going to keep me busy, and you know, she's always been very supportive. She's just like, well, okay, if that's what you're going to do, have at it. And it was fun because for us, I will tell you, the initial foray into that, you know, was right when the craft cocktail boom was coming. We met a bunch of very interesting people, you know, and it was different. It was a different world. I did not come out of the spirits world. I was not a giant, spirits fan. I was more of a wine drinker. So it was just interesting. I enjoy learning.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, in this business, I learn constantly.
Yeah. What do you think of the business now? It seems like people keep saying, oh, you know, bourbon and whiskey's peaked and it's on the way down, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, maybe tequila's on the way up, or maybe people just aren't drinking as much, or there's all these, like, you know, I don't know, conventional wisdom or things that people like to say about the industry. But, you know, I mean, people's favorite gift is still a bottle of bourbon.
Right. I would say all those statements are true, right? When we got in the business, we knew, oh my gosh, it's this big land rush. And then in 2017, when I think Donald Trump's first term, the Tax Act that passed allowed people to expense a large portion of capital expenditures. And so all of the large bourbon distilleries, including like even Tennessee Whiskey, Jack Daniels, but Maker's Mark, Wild Turkey, Buffalo Trace, all these guys virtually doubled their capacity.
Wow.
And so Phil and I were talking to all our shareholders and saying, there's going to be a bourbon glut. There's going to be a, we don't know when, but it's going to happen because, you know.
Are we there now?
When we were making 400 barrels of bourbon a year, Buffalo Trace was making 1,250 barrels a day, right? And they sell a lot more too. But The moral of the story is we have books in our gift shop, right? And one of them is Bourbon Empire. And if you read Bourbon Empire, you'll see the bourbon business for the entire time has been a boom and bust business. So mm-hmm. we knew that there's going to be these times of plenty and times of scarcity. And for us, we're fortunate in that we're certainly not a public company, so we don't have quarterly earnings to report and have people freaking out. But also, we're small enough that we believe if we continue to do the right thing with our visitors and our guests and sample them and get them excited, and we continue to do our job, which is to make the absolute best bourbon we can, we should be able to sell every bottle we make. And so yes. What we want is, in good times and bad, for our production team to constantly feel pressure in a positive manner.
Right.
Now, that hasn't happened all the time. But, you know, that's our sales team's job and mission is to make that happen.
Right.
So I think, you know, is anybody going to get in this business and George Clooney a brand from nowhere to $1 billion? No, not going to happen. But I think that there's certain niches in there. Mm-hmm. And I think it's as long as you grow slowly, choicefully, and intentionally, there's a business there. It's
yeah,
just,
I'm getting into this fairly late. I mean, this is like podcast number 7 or 8 or 9 or whatever. It's like, you know, I'm getting into this pretty late, but I don't care. I love
right.
it. This is what I want to do. It's not about just, you know, whatever, making money or whatever. It's more about like, hey, this is a passion.
Right.
This is what I want to do.
Yeah. And if you're interested in it and you're, you know, you find people that are interesting, you're going to learn something every day. It's going to be really cool. And it's, you know, you will have a deep knowledge over something that 99% of the country won't care.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it's fun. It's interesting, right?
Yeah.
And you know, I'm sure there's guys that do a bunch of different stuff, like collect watches, that feel the same way about that, or fountain
right.
guns.
Right.
But ours is bourbon, and what we like about bourbon is bourbon is best shared than enjoyed alone, and ends up being an introduction to a good story, and oftentimes somebody that becomes a good friend. And so,
yes.
so we
brings
like
people
that.
Together, which is really nice.
That's right. And
really
so
nice.
That's a positive thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're walking into a restaurant, you know, you're going to have a bourbon to drink. What are you going to order with it? A burger and fries, or a filet, or a Chilean sea bass? You know, what's your favorite?
You know, for me, I would say with bourbons, I like first a little bit of salt. So it's going to be something, whether it's, you know, calamari or even some truffle fries or something, or even, you know, some flatbread with some of that nice French or Irish butter with giant salt crystals in it.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I do like a nice steak, but lately, candidly, I enjoy it with like grilled salmon.
Mm.
You know, something with a nice, you know, char-grilled salmon. It's spectacular.
Yeah. Wow. So are you trying to introduce bourbon and whiskey and spirits to any current friends or, you know, people like that, that you're like, hey, we just met and you're not really into this, but, you know, let me pull you in, let me drag you down this road and see if I can convince you?
No, you know, it's actually the opposite, I would say. We might meet somebody and they'll say, blah, blah, blah. We learn a bit about the kids and we learn a bit about where they live and what do you do. And And then they find out, oh my gosh, you have a distillery? I've always wanted to learn about bourbon. And then we go down the path. So I'm not the pusher, but I will supply.
Yeah, for sure.
Supply
for sure.
once the need is expressed. And it's fun and it's interesting.
It is fun and interesting. You're right. When you walk into a party and you see somebody lean over and go, hey, what do you think they're saying about you? And what do you hope they're saying about you?
I hope they're saying, man, he makes some great bourbon. But the interesting thing is for us, and like I said this earlier, we are huge fans of the category. And, everybody on our team really enjoys exploring other bourbons probably as much as ours, right? Because the challenge of making your own bourbon is two things. Thing one, you might get caught in a specific flavor profile. But thing two is it's such a delayed gratification that, like, that bourbon I was talking about we're making today, well, buddy, it's 2029, right?
Yeah.
Before we get to try it. But I can go pick out three or four very interesting bourbons off the shelf at a great, retailer, and we can start having some fun today.
Right.
So I think it's very important to, A, share the love, B, be able to talk to a bunch of different flavor profiles and a bunch of different spirit brands, because our stuff is not going to be available everywhere, and you have to be able to order, and you got to know what you want.
Right, and you probably are available in most bars. Like the one behind me is Warren's American Whiskey Kitchen in Naples, Florida.
Yep.
So I'm in their speakeasy right here.
No, I love it. That's great. I love it.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's where you see, you remember from the tech world, everybody wants to know what's the total market, right? Total addressable market.
Total addressable market, TAM.
TAM, total addressable market. And the challenge is you can look at that wall behind you, the total addressable market's pretty big.
Yeah.
But that's a fragmented category.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a lot of entrants in this category.
There's a lot of entrants, and there's entrants every day. And like I said, we do see, particularly now that two dynamics have happened in the bourbon consumer that we view as positive. One is people have become much less number focused. Initially, I will tell you, 6 years ago, everybody's going by, this 8 years better than 7 year, 10 years better than 8 year. I got the 14. And some of that came from Scotch, where nobody could pronounce any of the words, but they could count, right? So they could see the number. Well, the Macallan 20 has to be better than the 14, right?
Sure.
It costs more. I think there's much less emphasis on that today, and people are more interested in something they like. And the second thing that really has opened up, hasn't helped us specifically, but I think has helped the industry quite a bit, has been the acceptance of companies that source. So somebody like Penelope, Barrel, all these companies that have 100% source their bourbon, but do a really nice job of finishing and do a nice job of going in and really selecting great barrels. That's a skill. And if you think back to the Scotch world, the guys that had tremendous respect in the Scotch world weren't necessarily the distillers at these small single malt distilleries, because a lot of those distilleries sold to the big companies, right? But it was the master blenders. It was the guy blending the Johnny Walker Blue.
Right.
And so we are seeing an emergence of kind of that mindset and skill set in some of these companies that are doing some very nice sourced whiskeys that have been finished beautifully. And so it's kind of an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, yeah. And one last fun question. If your personality was a bourbon, what would the tasting notes be?
That's a great one.
If your personality was a bourbon, what would the tasting notes be?
All right. I would say bright, vibrant, nuanced.
Little complexity.
Dark winter fruit, hints of citrus.
Ooh, nice. I like that. That's how about a little spice? Any spice in there?
Spice, yeah.
It's great.
And it's so funny, yeah.
Next time you're down at the Naples Total Wine, I can meet you at Warren's and we could have a dram.
Oh, that'd be great. We'd love it.
I will try to stop down in mid-September.
I am completely sincere. We, more than anything, we host people and we love it. And I can promise you, that one of the reasons that we were 2024 ADI Distillery of the Year is because our tours are spectacular. And, there's all sorts of options there. We have just our regular tours. We have some of our bourbon classes, Spirit of Florida Bourbon Experience, Perfect Pair, or even if you wanted to do a associate bourbon steward or executive bourbon steward course. So we'd love to have you. You'd have a great time, and we're just happy you thought of calling us today.
Definitely. I'm planning on stopping down. That'll be fantastic. Thank you so much, Mike. We're really appreciative of you coming on. And honestly, I can't wait to try some. I mean, and I will try some. If you want to send any, you can. I will do tastings. Perfect. I'll add it. I'm not going to, this part is going to not be in the podcast here, but I'm going to cut this out. But, if you want to send something, I will do tastings.
Oh, that'd be great.
Put it at the end of the podcast. And one of my good friends in the influencer business is Bourbon and Bikinis, who has probably the largest Instagram following out there. And, I'll send some to her too.
Oh, that'd be great. We'd love it. All right. Do I have your address information for sending stuff?
Probably not. I can give it to you if you want to jot it down, or I can email it to you or something.
If you could email it, that allows me to do two things. It allows me to share it with Will Hensler, our COO, we work together on the, particularly on the wholesale and an influencer side. And then also it's a lot easier for me to keep track of emails than handwritten notes.
What's your email, Mike?
So it's Mike, M-I-K-E, at StAugustineDistillery.com. And it's StAugustineDistillery.com. So Mike at StAugustineDistillery.com.
Gotcha. Okay. I'll send it to you. And, we will do those tastings on film and, try to promote you as much as we possibly can.
We love it. We appreciate it. Every drink counts.
That's one of the things I love about this business is everybody seems to want to help everybody.
And well, I will tell you, and I mean this as sincerely as I can, one of the things we do enjoy when we go up to the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. We try to do that every year, every other year, just kind of see what's going on. And I tell you, these big companies like Lux Row or Sazerac or Bardstown, they treat us like we're peers. And we are punks. I mean, we are tiny. We are gum on their shoe. And there's not a single person in this industry that has been anything but engaging, embracing, and humble. And so, compared to a lot of other industries, picture the financial industry, right?
Yeah.
It's a really, really friendly industry filled with good people. And you can't get better people. And I'm telling you, we're amazed every time we're up there. We're like, how can you be so nice to us?
Yeah.
it's one of the big surprises to me of since I've been in this is just exactly that. Like you're saying, the finance industry is cutthroat, you know?
Cutthroat.
And, you know, and everybody thinks they're the hottest thing since, you know, God's gift to the world. Right. You're like, oh, you could never do better than us, you know? It's like all right. This kind of stuff. But, yeah, this industry is just much more fun and accommodating, and it's a good time.
That's great. No, it really is. And like I said, you'll feel the same way after you visit us, right? We're going to treat you right too. So it's just how the industry works.
All right. I'll see you in about a month, Mike. All right. Take care.
Hope you enjoyed that, Whiskey Shenanigans fans. That was the whiskey portion of our podcast. And now we're going to transition into the shenanigans portion of our podcast. Enjoy. Okay, Whiskey Shenanigans fans, it's time for the shenanigans portion of the Whiskey Shenanigans podcast. So today I thought we'd do a little quick rundown of what's been going on in sports. Let's quickly take a look at a couple of things that have happened recently. First of all, Major League Baseball. Okay, the Dodgers and the Phillies are playing in the division series, and the Dodgers won the first game. No shock there, right? I mean, Ohtani pitched, you know, like he's like their whole team. Do they have anybody else on that team or is it pretty much just him? The guy is amazing. The best player I can remember seeing in a very long time. But the Phillies, you know, as expected, didn't play so great. All right. But, you know, you take a week off, you're hot. You're coming into the playoffs. You're hot. You've been playing great. And next thing you know, you take a week off. And no matter how many times you go out and do hitting practice and all this other nonsense, it's not the same. Taking a week off is death. It's death in the NFL. It's death in Major League Baseball. You got to have some really good pitching to overcome that. And they threw Sanchez out there, their best pitcher of all. And he couldn't overcome it. So they did all right, but, you know, they lost. So that's a loss today. The Dodgers are playing the Phillies again. And I would expect the Phillies to bounce back. Citizens Bank Park, you pretty much expect they got to win this game. They don't win this game, they're done. They're going to be eliminated pretty quickly here. So they really need to win this game. The Cubs and the Brewers. So the Brewers are really good. I mean, you know, just give it up for the Brewers. They're just that good of a team. Number one in the National League. They're just a really great team. And the Cubs have no chance in this series. So let's just forget about that. The Mariners and the Tigers. Who cares? The Mariners and the Tigers? I mean, how many people even live in Detroit anymore? Like 50? You know, it's just not a series that makes you want to sit up and pay attention. You know what I'm saying? So right now, the series is tied 1-1 between the Mariners and the Tigers. I have no idea what's going to happen in this series, nor do I really care. It's the American League. The Blue Jays and the Yankees. All right, too bad for the Yankees. They are running into a buzzsaw. The Blue Jays are really good. And, you know, Aaron Judge, all that hoopla out of New York City, all that nonsense. Come on, give me a break. The Blue Jays are really good, and they're better than the Yankees, and they're going to win this series. So you can pretty much expect the Blue Jays to be in the World Series. You can probably expect the Brewers to be in the World Series, or the Dodgers, or the Phillies. Cubs, no chance. Sorry, guys, not a chance. Now, how about a quick rundown of the NFL? Yesterday, there was a bunch of really interesting things that happened. First of all, the Patriots, the lowly, stinking, rotten Patriots, beat the Buffalo Bills. The mighty Bills, 4-0, fall to the Patriots 23-20. That's insane. The Bills played so bad. I watched the game. They played so bad. I was absolutely stunned. The Lions beat the Bengals. No surprise there. The Bengals have no defense. They're a sad sack of a team. The Titans and the Cardinals, who cares? The Commanders and the Chargers, you know, I mean, glad the Commanders won. You know, I think they're both pretty good teams. They might be playoff teams. Let's face it, somebody in the AFC West is going to have to make the playoffs. I mean, Kansas City's not doing so great, so it's either going to be the Chargers. It's definitely not going to be the Vegas team. I mean, you know, the Oakland Raiders, you know, no chance there. We'll see. So it could be the Chargers. Buccaneers beat the Seahawks. Okay. You know, Buccaneers are probably better than the Seahawks, but the Seahawks aren't bad. And the Texans destroyed the Ravens. I mean, that's not even fair. What was this score? 44 or something like that? Texans beat the Ravens 44-10. That's unbelievable. The Ravens absolutely are cratering the AFC North, the Raiders, the Bengals, Cleveland. They all stink. I mean, did the Steelers just win the division this week? They didn't even play. They had a week off, and they might have just won the division. Their opponents are terrible. What has gone wrong with the Ravens? I mean, Lamar's claiming he pulled his hammy. He didn't pull his hammy. He never limped off the field. He never put ice on it in the previous game. He didn't do anything. And then all of a sudden, I can't play in the next game. Well, that's just to prove that I really do have an injury, even though nobody saw that there was an injury. I don't know. I'm very skeptical. Not a Lamar fan. Don't think he should ever win an MVP. I don't care if his stats are fabulous. I don't care if his stats are great. He quit on his team. He quit on his team a week ago. And then he comes out and doesn't play in this game. And along with four other All-Pros or three other All-Pros on their team who didn't play, Texans, who aren't that great of a team, destroyed them. I think that's hilarious. So the Dolphins lost to the Panthers. That's surprising because the Panthers stink. It's surprising whenever the Panthers win a game. Okay. The Colts absolutely destroyed the Raiders. Raiders. Come on. I mean, are you serious? The Cowboys beat up on the Jets. I mean, the Jets are just sad, and the Cowboys are going to put up a lot of points every single week. The Giants lost to the Saints. Come on, Giants. You're starting to show a little bit of promise. And you lose to the Saints? Come on, man. The Niners beat the Rams, thankfully. Go Niners. I mean, I'm kind of like a fan. Like, I want them to do well. And then the Vikings in the early morning game in London beat the Browns. Barely. On a last second touchdown. I mean, what the heck is that? Come on, Vikings. I thought you were a half decent team. Thought you were going to come along, but you know, the Browns are not good. And you just barely pulled that one out. Not impressive, man. Not impressive. And then let's talk very quickly, because I know most of you probably don't care, but let's talk really briefly about the Premier League this past weekend. Okay. Tottenham won a pretty good game, 2-1. That's nice. Big Tottenham fan. Glad that they're winning. They're really doing well. They're in the, I think they're number three right now in the table, which is really great for them. Finishing in the top four would be a huge success for this team. Chelsea pulled off a big win this weekend. Who were they playing? Were they playing Arsenal? Or no, they were playing Liverpool, I think. And they pulled off a big win. That's like huge. They pulled off a huge win. That is shocking. And the final goal was in the like extra overtime, 96th minute or something like that. La Cucurella, you know, made this incredible pass right across the front of the goal mouth. And the guy came sliding in and knocked it into the net. Incredible play. Good for Chelsea. I'm not a Chelsea fan, but hey, good for them. And, you know, Liverpool, never want anything good to happen for those guys or Arsenal, frankly, since I'm a Tottenham fan. So that's pretty much the Premier League. Pretty surprising. The teams that are doing well this year are surprising. The big, big name clubs, the Manchester United, the Manchester City, you know, these, even Chelsea, they're not doing all that great. I mean, of course, Arsenal and Liverpool, blah, blah, blah. They spend outrageous sums of money. They buy the best players in the world, and they're always going to be good. Okay, fine. But everybody else that is doing well, Tottenham is arguably one of the big teams, but the other ones, not so much. So, you know, hey, pretty interesting what's going on over there. So that's pretty much for the Premier League as well. So shenanigans wise, what is the most surprising thing that happened? I think the Texans crushing the Ravens is the most surprising thing that happened. I mean, that was insane. What happened to the Ravens? This is a good team. I swear to you, I said they were going to win the Super Bowl last year. They didn't even make it. As usual, they cratered before they got there. They just choke. They fall apart. Of course, I'm a Steelers fan, so I love that. But that is the most surprising thing that happened in sports this weekend. And let's look forward to some more baseball playoffs. Let's see what's going on. A week or two from now, we'll find out who's in the championship series for the American and the National League. And then finally, we'll find out who's in the World Series. And whoever it is, it's going to be one of these really good teams. So it's going to be a really interesting World Series, I think, this year. Like I said, could be the Dodgers or the Phillies from the National League. Probably going to be the Blue Jays from the American League. Unless, you know, Aaron Judge just hits, you know, 14 mighty home runs in the next couple of games. So that's probably about it. Thanks for joining us, Whiskey Shenanigans. And for some of those hot takes, I'm going to give myself a bottle. This is a bottle of the Widow Jane. Widow Jane Paradigm Rye. Batch number 81, bottles 5 and 6, 2023. 46.5 alcohol, 93 proof. Surprisingly good bottle of rye. Really nice. So those hot takes brought to you by Widow Jane. Well, Whiskey Shenanigans fans, thanks for joining us this week. We'll have another episode coming out in 2 weeks, and we're going to get that regular two-week cadence going, and you can always look forward to one every other week. So thanks again, and here's a clip from our next episode.
My belief, I think, that we were the first flavored bourbon, which was very controversial in the beginning because bourbon purists, whiskey nerds, we all like our whiskey. We're very protective of bourbon, so when somebody comes out with a flavored bourbon, it caused a little disruption, and I took some heat for it, but it's now way more accepted.